Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to welcome you all to All Sides Weekend. This is the Book Show. This is a very special edition of the Book Show because I've decided we're going to have a party today. We're going to talk about books that are marvelous gifts, books that are wonderful winter reads for those cold nights. We have some very provocative titles for children as well. And I am delighted to introduce the panel. Michelle Herman is here. She is a writer. She is Professor Emerita from The Ohio State University. She is a dancer, and she's reading a book that I'm reading, and I'm dying to hear what she thinks about it. Chris Hickey is here from the Columbus Library. She is the Youth Services Manager at the Whetstone branch of the library. And Chris Hickey comes every month and brings us quick picks, those books everybody wants to read. Cassie Rose is here. She is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. If you love books, then you need to read her blog. And Brian Lohr is here. Brian is the owner of Cover to Cover Books in Upper Arlington, which is a wonderful store of books for kids. And he is bringing us a stack of wonderful books for kids, really of all ages. You've got K through 12 at least in your shop. And I want to start with you, Brian, because people should buy books for children. So help us out here.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And so I'd love to start us off with The Old Sleigh, which is by Jarrett Pumphrey and Jerome Pumphrey, two brothers that have made an absolutely beautiful book. It's a bit of community. It's a bit of repurposing. It's just all sorts of feels with this book. And so you have then a father and a son, and they go out and they deliver wood out to all sorts of community members. But then that sleigh breaks. And so what do? They don't worry about it. What they do is they repurpose that sleigh into a new, smaller sleigh. And so it teaches, I don't want to say that something is completely didactic and it teaches, but it does do in a very gentle way support families, communities, and being resourceful. And what I love about this book, if you could see the inside, you have these beautiful overlays, almost wood print-like cuts throughout the book itself. And it pairs so nicely with a previous book of theirs called The Old Truck. And it has a very similar feel to that. I feel like this is going to be, on the Ezra Jack Keats list and many other lists. It's just an absolutely beautiful gift. We have paired it with The Old Truck, as well as then a letter from the Pumphreys to create a beautiful book box. We have also signed copies of The Old Sleigh. So just a really, really beautiful book about community.
What age range?
Yes, absolutely. So picture books are generally considered ages 3 to 6, but I would say 3 to 900.
That's the book, The Old Sleigh, just looking at it, that really you could look at that in July and just enjoy the look of that book.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just such a beautiful piece. And I love the little red bird on many of the pages. The cardinal is just charming.
Brian Lohr is the owner of Cover to Cover Books for Children in Upper Arlington. He is going to be talking about gift ideas for the kids in your life on today's edition of All Sides Weekend Books. And I'd like to know what Cassie Rose is reading right now.
I picked up a book that surprisingly involved me. I would look forward to reading it every night, and nonfiction. And it is called The Secret Life of a Cemetery. It's about Père Lachaise. And I mean, I thought
What is Père Lachaise?
Père Lachaise is the world famous cemetery in Paris where Chopin is buried, Edith Piaf, Eloise and Abelard,
Gertrude Stein.
Yes, I mean, it is
Jim
just
Morrison.
The who's who. Yes, Jim Morrison. He's one of the most famous that is
I'll bet.
There. And the one that they've had the most trouble with, because the grave is in a place when he was buried, they just sort of, they didn't realize that all the fans would be coming and all, you know, the drunk fans would be coming.
And 60 years later, they still are.
Yes, yeah. they are. And so, and they've even talked, he even writes in the book about how they had to, they wanted to try and repatriate him to the United States and all the ways they've had to manage it. But the author is the curator or the manager of Père Lachaise right now. And he got the job in 2018 when he was 36 years old. And he had been managing another cemetery in Paris. And, you know, he sort of went into shock that he did get it. But what he writes about in this book is one little bit of memoir. He shares how he grew up as the son of a stonemason in a small town in France. So he was not in any way afraid of or put off by death. And he, because there were just, you know, tombstones being carved in the front yard of his house. And he writes about going to law school and then not liking the law school, the practice. He loved the academics. And then, you know, he gets this civil service job in the Department of Cemeteries. Well, one thing leads to the other. So you get a little memoir there. But the majority of the book is really about that Père Lachaise is a working cemetery.
Are they still burying people there?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And he explains how that works. And it's, and the way that he writes to, it is so normal, gentle, kind. There's nothing about it that's pretentious or whatever. And that's, I think, what drew me to this book, because he had no intention of writing a book. What happened is that during COVID, he started putting pictures on social media of the foxes that he discovered and the other wildlife in Père Lachaise. And he was putting it online. And so that everybody in Paris who was in lockdown just became enamored of that. And then, of course, he was approached by publishers. So he's very genuine in this book. And also, it's so interesting. Like, he talks about how Oscar Wilde, his, the Sphinx that is his monument, and that there is this lore that, you know, people were outraged because the testicles on the Sphinx were visible, and that two angry or just appalled English women, you know, destroyed them. Well, there is no proof of that, but now there is this mythology that the I can't believe I'm saying this on the air, but that the testicles are used as paperweights.
Call the, Cassie Rowe.
In the manager's office. So when he, you know, Benoit Galot got the job, the first thing he did was that he searched through the manager's office to find out if they were indeed there, and they're not. So that does come out in the book.
I told you this show was going to be a party.
Yeah,
so
right.
I told you that.
Right. So he also, but the emphasis on it being a working cemetery is that, you know, people will come and think they can jog through it, they can have picnics, and how he manages that. He also lives on site with his wife and four children, and he writes about how when his kids are little and they would have birthday parties and the address was, you know, the cemetery, and how he had to explain to the parents.
I think that would make you a really cool kid, I would think.
I would think so, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's beautifully written, and there are photos in there of the natural world, the wildlife that is there.
Now, is it readily available? Can we buy this book?
Oh, yes.
Okay, hold on up. Let me see.
And it is in the library, too.
Okay, all right. The Secret Life of a Cemetery, The Story of Père Lachaise by Benoit Galois.
Yes.
Okay.
Had he written before this?
No, he had not.
See, what I find, I can't help wondering, you know, whether he was approached to write the book.
Well, I think, yes, he was. And in the introduction, explains that, because on Instagram, people saw this fox and her cubs and in Père Lachaise. And then he started putting other photos up where you see the natural life that is there. One of the things he writes about is how when he took the job, how they stopped using pesticides and how that affected the 200-year-old cobblestones and the wildlife that started to grow up in between. How, you know, it's very much of a labyrinth if you have been there. I was there a long time ago. And you can easily get lost. And he does say that the way to go to the cemetery is to get a map and just go and get lost. And that way you really do see it. And another funny thing that he says is that people come in and think it's a museum, so they think there's going to be a cafeteria. There's going to be an audio-guided tour. There's going to be a place to put your luggage, and there's not, because, again, it's a working cemetery.
There was a McDonald's at the end of the hill back, but this is 40 years ago. It may be gone by now. But anyway, we have to move on, but thank you for that.
Yes.
The Secret Life of the Cemetery, the Story of Père Lachaise. I'm going to ask Chris Hickey to give us a quick pick before the break right now, and then we'll come back and talk more with Michelle, and we have some more titles with Brian Lohr. Take it away.
Okay, so this one, I'm going a little rogue. So this one is not a quick pick, but as you know, in December, I always bring a holiday romance. So this is one of the hot ones. This is called Good Spirits by B.K. Borison. Now, she normally writes contemporary romance. This is her first step into like a cozy fantasy romance. So it's about a woman who falls in love with the ghost of Christmas past. So her name is Harriet. She loves Christmas. She's the kind of person that has multiple pairs of whimsical Christmas pajamas and keeps candy canes in her pocket. And then one night she is visited by a very handsome Irish man, fisherman. And he's the ghost of Christmas past. Now, there are many ghosts of Christmas past in this world, in this book. He just happens to be one of them. He died 100 years ago, and he was an Irish fisherman, and he's very, very handsome. So she's not sure why she's being haunted. She doesn't have any, you know, darkness like Scrooge does. But, you know, they go through the memories and they're still not finding. And he's actually the ghost is actually confused why he's there as well. And then they start going into his memories, which has never happened before. So that is an interesting twist, which I won't give much away with that. It is a romance. They do fall in love, and it is spicy. It's pretty spicy. So if you've got someone who likes the holiday stuff, they like spicy romance, it is a sweet story. And
sweet spicy.
It's sweet spicy. It's just a nice holiday romance. The characters are great.
In the summer, you bring us the really raw stuff. But
yes, that's
Christmas is the sweet spicy. Give us the title and author.
The title is Good Spirits, and it's B.K. Borison. Now, this is going to be a series called, she's calling it her Ghosted series. And there's going to be another book coming out in September called Grim Tidings. So I'm assuming that one is also Christmas themed.
Okay, we have time for one more quick pick before we take the break.
Okay, so this one is a great one for fans of Wicked. It's called Simply More by Cynthia Erivo, a book for anyone who has been told they are too much. Now, she's the actress who plays Elphaba, the Wicked Witch of the West, in Wicked. And she has written this book. It's a short book. It's less than 200 pages. It's little vignettes that are inspiring pep talks, you know, talk about her life. She talks about how there's a moment in Wicked for Good when Elphaba stops defending herself to a world that misunderstands her and embraces her own power. And she feels a connection to that. As a person, she feels a connection to the character in that way. So she grew up in London. She's the child of Nigerian immigrants. And she shares in Nigerian culture that after a loss, you cut your hair. And so when she left drama school, it was a new chapter. So she cut her very long hair short and she started to feel like herself. And so then as she starts filming Wicked, she takes all of her hair off. And she likes that because she's now a canvas that can transform. And it's really beautiful. And here's a takeaway quote that I want to share. Lots of people will not get us as we work to be more. We have to let go of their perception and do what's ours regardless. So that is Simply More by Cynthia Erivo.
A quick pick from the Columbus Library. Thank you, Chris Hickey. Making one point, generally all the books we discuss on the show will be listed on the WOSU Facebook page maybe by tomorrow. So check it out later. You don't have to be writing stuff down. We're going to take a quick break and come up back with more from Michelle Herman and Brian Lohr and Cassie Rose and Chris Hickey. We'll be right back.
how does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back, All Sides Weekend. This is The Book Show. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to have your company. Thank you very much. Cassie Rose is here, WOHU's book critic, Chris Hickey from the Columbus Library, Brian Lohr from Cover to Cover Books, and Michelle Herman, professor emerita from The Ohio State University. She's an author and a dancer, and she is here with her favorite. Michelle Herman, what do you have for us?
So, you know, I always like to have a theme, and I decided this time the theme would be books I'm in the middle of reading, which I realize Chris and Cassie often do, but I never do. So I always am reading at least six books at the same time. I usually have them in bed with me so I can go back and forth. I'm going to start with the one I'm the farthest into, Heart the Lover by Lily King. It's her new novel just out, and I'm about halfway through this one. I am actually at the point where we move into the future. So this is a love story. It's a kind of coming of age, first love story about a love triangle in college. It's very compelling. I love a good love story. And it's a kind of an intellectual love story. The three kids at the center of it are all very self-consciously literary, very smart. The narrator is called Jordan, which is not her name, but is called Jordan because the boys give her that name after the character in The Great Gatsby. They start out calling her Daisy, but then they decide she's more Jordan than Daisy.
Is she their mother?
No. But she falls in love in turn with both of them. And it's completely absorbing. And then there's a break and we move into the many years, 21 years into the future. And Lily King is a great favorite of mine. Her last novel was called Writers and Lovers and was my favorite book I read that year. I think that was 2022 or maybe it was earlier. And then she has a collection of stories between these two called... called something. Five Tuesdays. I can't. It's Five Tuesdays and something. I can check, but I can't check because I can't find. There we go. Five Tuesdays in Winter. I blocked that word out. That is delightful. She has books earlier than that, too, that I'm working my way through. But that's my first suggestion to everyone listening.
All right. Lily King. That's a suggestion from Michelle Herman, who, like me, is reading six or seven books at once. Does that make you crazy to do that?
No, they just have to be very different from each other.
Okay.
Otherwise, they get all mixed up.
But do you remember? I mean, do you remember where you are? Does one book sound like the other one at some point?
Well, that's why I make sure they're all really different from each other.
Got it.
I would never read like multiple books by the same writer at the same time.
No.
That would be a disaster.
I can do three. I can't do six or seven. Good for
but
you.
But also, as I was telling Cassie before we got in here, I have a tendency these days at my age to just forget what I've read as soon as I finish
reading.
Of course,
that's why I write them down. Yes, yeah, absolutely.
So, in fact, I told someone I had read this book, and I hadn't read it yet. I just discovered this the other day. So.
Well, it's all right to predict the future. Good for you. Brian Lohr is here. He's the owner of Cover to Cover Books for Kids, and I'd like to offer us a few titles and talk a bit about why I should buy this book for a child in my life.
Absolutely. Well, first we're going to start off with The Story Orchestra, Hansel and Gretel. It's the new one for this year under the Story Orchestra banner. They're illustrated by Jessica Courtney Tickle, and they have these beautiful foil covers that you can then shimmer in the light here in the studio. But what I love about these is that they give some back matter. So if you have then a music fan in your life or hope to have a music fan in your life, these are great. So this one's Engelbert Humperdinck.
Engelbert Humperdinck, not the singer. Okay.
Yes, exactly. So then you have these beautiful spreads and you have then this beautiful music that comes from, let's see if I can organize this correctly. Yep. So just absolutely beautiful spreads. And it's great for anybody in your family. Now, I'm going to transition this really quickly into something, and let's keep this book quiet. Okay.
What is the Story Orchestra? Is that a series?
Yes, yeah. It is. So they've done Vivaldi. They've done all sorts of great composers, Holst, The Planets, and they're all illustrated picture books, again, meant for ages 3 all the way up to 99, not 900, like I said before. But it's just an absolutely fantastic series, maybe 10 books in picture book format. And then they do board books for babies, too.
Well, are they about the composer? Like, is the book about Vivaldi and then they showcase his music, or they choose one piece?
So they then showcase, in this case, one piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then they dive into each section of that piece.
Oh, interesting.
That's a whole series. You can get that at cover to cover. My thanks to Brian Lord, who has something else for us.
Yeah, so now something completely different. Butterface, Super Gross Butts. This was the one that we couldn't wait to start talking about on today's show. So it posits whether it shows a picture then on the first page of what could be a butter face. We're not sure.
Now, you're not saying butter like the food face.
Yes,
you're saying
exactly.
Butt or
yes,
butt
the rear end.
Meeting your fanny, right? All right. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Of an animal. And so then the child or the adult or whoever is reading this has to guess, is it a butter face? And so you can see this scaly looking thing that I'm showing everybody here in the studio and if you're watching online. And then what happens? Well, oh, that's the face of the greater short-horned lizard. Sometimes there are tricks in these. This is the third one in this series. The first one has a little bit of a trick at the end. I'm not going to give away too much, but it's both.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
So that is butter face.
Butt or face, super gross butts.
Yep.
But you have to guess if you're looking at the face or the butt of different animals.
That's exactly
we
right.
We don't have any human beings. I should hesitate to
no.
I hasten to add.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay, in this book, which actually, that's a fantastic idea, I have to say, for a kick. You get a little science there, and you get to laugh at the same time.
Yeah.
Give me one more.
Okay, so let's talk about our friend Lisa Stone Leahy. We've done a number of events with her. This is this year's middle grade reader, which means 8 to 12, typically. In age range, the Lambda Award for middle grade, and it's called Mallory in Full Color. And Mallory is this quirky protagonist. She's kind of coming into her own. But one of the things that I love, love, love about this book is that similar in some ways to Jerry Craft's The New Kid, there is art throughout this. Now, it is a chapter book, but there's a webcomic that Mallory then creates, the character creates. And then that is all throughout the book itself. So it shows some interior emotions of Mallory. She has this beautiful arc, really great coming-of-age story. That's Mallory in Full Color by Lisa Stone Leahy, meant for ages 8 to 12.
That's a recommendation from Brian Lohr, who is the owner of Cover to Cover Books in Upper Arlington, Books for Kids. Brian is bringing us some great gift ideas for the kids in your life. And we are going to go transition from that to another quick pick from Chris Hickey in the Columbus Library.
Okay, so I'm going to share one. And this is another short one that you could read very quickly. It is Catherine Newman's book, Wreck. Now, she wrote Sandwich, which was very popular, and these are the same characters. So this is 2 years later after the book Sandwich, where Rocky, her husband, and her children are on vacation. They're now back home 2 years later. Her widowed father has moved in with them. And so far, things are, you know, domestically comforting. This is a comforting read. And then she becomes captivated by an accident that kills one of her son's classmates. Her son is an adult, and it involves a train, and she becomes obsessed, and she goes down rabbit holes and can think of little else, even going as far as like friending the young man's mother on Facebook, which she doesn't understand why she's doing it, but she still does it. And yes, the family becomes involved, and there is a connection that we will learn later in the story. But she is, I enjoy her as a character so much because she loves her people so much, but she loves them anxiously. And it's just so relatable. And there's a quote that she says that just, I think about it all the time, and it's being a parent is unsurvivable. It's the Poltergeist movie every second. And
we're
I just
all
find
laughing,
that
yes.
So I just think about that all the time. But yeah, if you like that, like a domestic novel about just really great characters, this Catherine Newman, I think, is a good one to pick up. She has also written one of my favorite children's books, which is called One Mixed Up Night. And it is about two children who spend the night in an IKEA. And I was surprised to find out she's the same person, which was wonderful. So Catherine Newman is a great read, great gift idea, and just a quick comforting read.
Which we like for these cold days, don't we?
Yes.
Quick comforting read. Comfort us, Cassie Rose. You already given us dead people. Now let's...
Well, yes, I don't know that this is a comforting read, but I am going to recommend it because it's another one of my very favorite reads this month. And again, it's another nonfiction. And it is called When You Listen to This Song, and it's by an author, Lola Lafon. And what it is that... this is not a grim book, but... So don't go there when I tell you what it's about, which is that she spends the night in the annex of the Anne Frank Museum. Now, here's the thing is that this is not a chapter book. It is a book that's written in I would say almost reflections or maybe essays. But once you start reading this book, it becomes so involving because what she is doing is that she is bringing Anne Frank to life as a person and not the celebrity that we know her as. I mean, that seems to be what she is looking for. So she writes about how she was given permission to do this, to spend the night in the annex. And she then also writes about, she has a walkie-talkie with her with security, but mostly she reflects back on Anne Frank and brings moments to life that are key to her and what she is thinking through. I'll give you an example, which is that Anne Frank had heard a radio broadcast by the Dutch education minister who was in exile in London. And he was encouraging all of the Dutch residents to keep journals, diaries, and to write letters so that there would be testimony. And so Anne Frank told her father that she had this diary. And she went through after that broadcast and started to revise her diary and work on it.
Is that true or is that a fiction?
I believe
premise?
It. No, I think I believe it to be true. Okay. From what she's saying here. And because Anne, and that's one of the things she's bringing out here is that Anne was a writer. This is not just an adolescent diary. So he also then talks about Otto Frank and how he, the father who comes back afterwards into the annex. So she writes about that. And she goes into also her own history. She is, the author was born in Bucharest in Romania. She's, and has a family that is, survived the Holocaust or experienced it. And she writes about how when she was an adolescent, she tried to ignore that because she wanted to feel normal. Yeah. She wanted to feel like she had a normal background. It's really a beautifully written book, and it is one that is unforgettable. It is not, I just want to emphasize, it's not disturbing. I mean,
title again.
It's called When You Listen to This Song. And that title comes from something that it has nothing to do with Anne Frank that happens at the end.
That's a recommendation from Cassie Rose here on All Sides Weekend Books. And Michelle Herman is in the middle of reading another book for us.
So one of the other books I'm in the middle of reading is called Maggie, semicolon, or A Man and a Woman Walk into a Bar. And this one I'm maybe a third of the way into. In this one, a woman, a mother, who is nameless, is navigating both her husband's affair and the subsequent divorce and her cancer diagnosis at the same time. Now, I want to echo Cassie. It sounds grim, but it's not a grim book. with her best friend as her kind of right-hand woman. The protagonist works her way through the months after she learns of the affair and finds out that she has cancer. And the book is really about dealing with grief and with healing and reclamation. She talks to her tumor. She names her tumor. She gives it the name of the woman her husband is having an affair with. So there are two Maggies. The tone of the book is light and humorous, and the narrator creates a guide to my husband, a user's manual for the human Maggie. All the comedy here is laced with darkness, of course it is, given the subject, but the narrator's tone really keeps us from falling into that darkness. It's a strangely joyous read,
I found. Where are you in it?
Maybe a third of the way.
A third of the way. Okay. Give us the title one more time.
Maggie, or A Man and a Woman Walk into a Bar. The author is Katie Yee, who is Chinese, and so is the narrator. And just, you know, complete information, the human Maggie is white, which is also an issue in the book.
A recommendation from Michelle Herman. You're listening to All Sides Weekend Book. This is the holiday party of the book show. We're giving gift ideas. Nothing's gloomy, although we've talked about Anne Frank and cemeteries and naming your tumor. But listen, there's a lot going on with these books, and these folks are reading them for a reason. And we have a quick pick, a quick thing for a quick pick. Could you? Before our next break, Chris Hickey from the Columbus Metropolitan Library.
Okay, so I have some good literary fiction by Ian McEwan. This is called What Can We Know? And we're just going to go 100 years into the future, and things are not great. It's a world remade by climate change and nuclear war, and communities are self-reliant, kind of like if you think about the Middle Ages. And this takes place in England in 2119, and the water has risen, so it's a much smaller island. So it's about, there are two narrators. The first one is Thomas, and he's a humanities professor. So there are still universities in England at this time. And he is studying, he's on the hunt for this poem that was written in 2014 called A Corona for Vivian. And this poem has been missing since 2014, when it was read aloud by the writer. And then our second narrator is Vivian, and this is 100 years prior, so closer to where we are now. And there's a great secret about the creation of the poem and why it has gone missing in the first place. It's just such an interesting premise. And he addresses AI, so he talks about AI in this novel, and it is regulated by the universities at that time so that people don't become reliant on it. And he refers to a moment in history known as the derangement. And it's a time when people were blinded by the pace of events while nature rose up against humanity. So this is an interesting read. It's Ian McEwan's What Can We Know?
A quick pick from the Columbus Library. We're going to take another quick break and come back with another segment.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back. This is All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. The books we are discussing on this show will eventually turn up rather quickly on Facebook, either the WOSU Public Media page or the Columbus Library page. So you don't have to like be like me and try to write everything down, because it doesn't work anyway. Chris Hickey is here from the Columbus Library. Cassie Rose is here, WOSU's book critic. Michelle Herman, who is a writer and professor emerita. Brian Lohr from Cover to Cover and Books for Kids. So give us another Brian Lohr book for a kid.
Yeah, so Joe Sutphin is a really interesting illustrator. He lives here in the somewhat central Ohio area, and he did a reimagining to some degree of The Little Christmas. It still holds the spirit of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, but Joe has infused it with such beautiful illustrations that are throughout it. His style is warm and inviting. It has gold foiling on the outside and underneath the dust jacket. But I just love his illustrations that are throughout. Some take up a full page. Some are spot illustrations. But this one is definitely a beautiful keepsake for families throughout the world. And that is Little Christmas Carol, based on the classic text of Charles Dickens, but the illustrations by Joe Sutphin are just darling and will warm the hearts of all the families out there.
So that's for older kids like me, too. Probably.
There you go. Yes,
that's
exactly.
Very good. From Cover to Cover, that's my friend Brian Lohr. Michelle Herman, okay, what are you in the middle of now?
Okay, so I'm in the middle of this book called Vernon's Subtext, but I've decided, because now I feel self-conscious about being grim, this is a pretty grim book, to pair this with a book that I have finished reading. So two rock and roll books. So Vernon's Subtext by Virginie Despentes. I have no idea how you say her name. She's a French writer.
Subutex.
Yeah, no, that's the name of the book. Vernon Subutex, which is the name of the protagonist. The author, the book, the cover just says, this is what she's like.
Okay.
She's a very punk rock writer. Virginie Despentes?
Despentes, whatever.
Who knows? Anyway, so I'll first tell you very briefly about this one. So this is actually volume one of a trilogy, and I'm not sure I will read the other two. I'm enjoying this, but it's a lot. It's very intense. And I've never read anything else by her, although she's published quite a lot. So we learn very quickly in the beginning of the book. It's in first person. No, it's not in first person. I'm sorry. It's in a very close third person, that Vernon Subtext was the proprietor of an infamous record store in Paris. Now, the book takes place about 10 years ago, a little more than 10 years ago. So it's before the resurgence of the record store, which we were talking about before the show started. But this was, the book was published 10 years ago, but it takes place in the early 2000s when record stores in big cities were failing and closing. So after his record store closes rapidly, his life completely falls apart. And when it opens, he's very close to being homeless and soon is homeless. Although before he pitches that far into despair, he comes up with an ingenious solution to his financial troubles, which is writing to all his former customers. Brian, you should keep this in mind if you ever get in trouble, and telling them that he is living in Canada now that he's closed the store, but he's back in Paris for a short time, and could he spend a few days on their couch? And he goes from couch to couch. So while I say it's grim, it's also very funny. It's social satire, and it has a very much a rock and roll background. Everybody is weed-addled and snorting coke and getting drunk, and it's they're just a mess. It's fun to read, but what's even more fun to read is a rock and roll book that just came out last week that is on my radar because the author is Michael Cardos, who was once a graduate student of mine.
Yeah.
Wonderful writer.
Remember him.
And the new book is called Fun City Heist. I don't have a copy of it with me to show, but it is a delightful book about a rock and roll band reassembling many years after their heyday to perform a heist at an amusement park. And it's a charming book. It's laugh out loud funny. It's got a little bit of a thriller element to it, as many of Mike's books have. And it would be a really fun rock and roll read over the holiday, I think.
That sounds like a fun gift.
Sounds
like a fun gift. That's from Michelle Herman, who is a writer herself, certainly a published author of many titles. What's your latest book?
The latest book is If You Say So, a kind of memoir in essays.
Yes, and a wonderful book it is as well. We've been delighted to talk about it here on the show. Cassie Rose, you've got a couple for us, I think, of recommendations.
Well, I do. I'm going to start with one called Sea Scraper by Benjamin Wood. That may sound familiar to people who follow the Booker Prize because it was longlisted for the Booker Prize. It is a really involving and it's elegantly written and takes place in the 1960s in a small town on the shore of northern England. And it's about a 20-year-old man named Thomas Flett who scrapes the shoreline for shrimp and with his cart and horse. And everybody else has motorized vehicle or things, whatever, that they go out. But he sticks to this old tradition with his cart and the horse because it was taught to him by his grandfather. So there's a devotion there to legacy. It's drudgery. It's a stinky job. He has to go out early in the morning with low tide. And, you know, his relationship, his companionship with the horse is it's just wonderful. Anyway, this takes place over 24 hours. He goes in and he gets payment for the shrimp that he has scraped. And then he goes home and in the living room, and he lives with his mother, is an American filmmaker who is talking to his mother. Now, he thinks that he doesn't realize that this is an American filmmaker. He thinks it's another man that is trying to date his mother. Anyway, it turns out that this man has decided that the location is perfect for his next project, and he also wants Thomas Flett and his horse and his cart in it. So he warns him about the dangers that are out there on the shoreline at low tide, which are sink pits, and how the heavy fog can be a problem, but this is all that the man wants. His name is Edgar. So they go out that evening at low tide. And then something happens. And that put me on the edge of my seat and worried me deeply. This is a story that at first may seem like the stranger comes to town and changes a life. Because the thing is about Thomas Flett is that he knows that he could be doing more. And it has to do with music because he works with folk songs on a guitar in the barn in secret. Even his mother doesn't know. This is truly a wonderful story. It is not, it turns out not as you would expect. It's in terms of, you know, a miracle opportunity. You know, here he meets an American filmmaker, but really more realistic. And it has to do, I believe, with legacy and also knowing what your strengths and weaknesses are. So this is called Sea Scraper by Benjamin Wood. And I'll very quickly mention another book that's also a novel. It's called Ash Before Oak by Jeremy Cooper. Jeremy Cooper, I mentioned first here on the show several months ago, a book called Brian, which was about a movie buff, and which I highly love that book, which drew me to this book, Ash Before Oak, that Jeremy Cooper had written previously. It is written as a journal of a man who has left London to go into the West Country. And he every day just works out in the natural world because he is healing from something. He just needs to be out of the world. And so every day and every page is a journal entry. And it may just be a paragraph. And a lot of times it is just a paragraph or two paragraphs. And he writes about what he has done that day, what he has seen. And he also, but he does not reveal what he's trying to heal in himself. There will be a line that will be mentioned, I think maybe 30 pages in, then maybe another one, 75 pages in. And he says, I really can't talk about it. Or here I am eloquent in my diary here, but, or my journal, but I really am not feeling eloquent. I'm filled with fear. I'm filled with anxiety. Yet he's writing about the natural world. That's the thing about Jeremy Cooper. His main characters feel real. They are, you know, they are good people at heart, but they're just a little different in terms of how they are struggling with life. And this book, you just, once you start reading it, you'll just keep turning the pages. So I'll leave it at that.
And I think people love a big page turner, and particularly in this weather. I mean, it's great to just absorb yourself into a book. That's a recommendation from Cassie Rose. And I want to ask Michelle Herman one more time before we get to another quick pick. You are in the middle of reading a book that I'm in the middle of reading called Playwork.
I bet you're much farther than I am into it. This is the one I am. The reason it was last in my pile is because I've just started it.
Okay.
And I love it.
Yes.
This book has been on my radar since it came out. So it was early in the year that it came out. And I have had it on my list, and it just keeps, other books keep coming on top of it. And I finally got hold of it and started it. And, you know, as we were talking about.
Why? Why do you like,
well,
why?
Well, for one thing, I'm a sucker for a book about actors. Back in the day in New York, everyone I knew was an actor. I had a poker game. Well, you too, right? A poker game with actors. I was in love with one actor after another. Who broke my heart, both of them. But it's a world that I am familiar with, and the fact that it's taking place in the 80s.
That's my era, baby. Yeah.
I left New York in 1984, and right up until the last minute, I was in love with an actor and playing poker with a bunch of actors every Friday night. You say more about it than I can say.
Well, I mean, I was in love with Sopranos, which is not a good idea. I'll just put that out there right now. But New York in the 80s was my era, and I'm almost at the end of it. So I'm not going to say anything more except that for me, remembering that time very well, it rings true. This writer, who's probably too young to have been around in the 80s, did a very, very good job of recreating that era. What's not in the book are things like AIDS and crack and the really horrible part of the 80s that all of us remember. But really, sucker for actors, you bet. You betcha, yeah. And what about Naomi? Well, you may not know her very well yet.
Yeah, but I know her well enough to be worried.
Tell me the title and act.
Play World by Adam Ross.
Which Michelle Herman is just starting, and I'm almost finishing. And
I'm trying to decide. I'm leaving for New York today. The book is too big to take on the plane.
It's a lot. Yeah,
I might have to. You know, I try not to get books for the Kindle, but this might be a case where it's worth doing.
Quick question: how long do you have to be into a book before you decide I'm going to continue this or not?
Used to be 50 pages.
Right.
Now it's 3. I make a very, and that has to do with my age.
I'm glad you say that, because I'm the same
very
way.
Very fast.
Yeah, I could do 50, and now it's like if I'm not grabbed by page 5, I'm out of here.
And I will say the only good thing I have to say about Amazon Land is that ability to download a sample of a book has really helped me, because I can read a couple of pages and know whether I want to read the book or not.
All right. Yeah. But finish that one.
I can tell.
I'm here to tell you. And Chris Hickey, I want you to end the show with a bunch of quick picks from the library. And you know what I forgot to do is to ask you to explain what a quick pick is.
I will explain, and then I'll share a couple delightful ones. So quick picks are the hot books, long hold lists. You come into a building, there's a special display. If you see your book, grab it, check it out, and you jump the line. So I have two books, and they are part of kind of like a trend, which is romance novels where the title, they're Taylor Swift lyrics. So I'm going to share just these two very quickly. So Abby Jimenez is a much-loved romance writer. She has one called Say You'll Remember Me. The character's mother has dementia, and she has a meet-cute with this very handsome veterinarian. They go on an all-night date, and then she's going to leave to care for her mother the next morning. And so it's a double meaning. We'll see what happens. So the next one is Annabelle Monaghan, and this one is called It's a Love Story. So it's about a woman who is the kind of person who works on movies who picks scripts. She overpromises that she's going to have this famous pop star write a song for it. She overpromises. She hasn't spoken to this person in 20 years. So this takes them on a hilarious romp with this other cinematographer who has figured out she's full of it.
What book in the library right now has the longest wait list?
Oh, my goodness. It might still be the Virginia Giuffre book. And I'm guessing, because I haven't checked, the Nobody's Girl, which I did finish.
I just got it yesterday. I was 3 months on the list, but I just got it yesterday. So
that's probably one of the longest ones.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in January. Very troubling book, but important. Yeah.
Yes.
And speaking, we have 1 minute. Let's be happy with kids, with children, because you're not giving us, Yes. Happy.
All right. So let's talk about facing feelings inside the world of Raina Telgemeier. That doesn't sound necessarily happy, but this whole entire book is a great book for anybody that's looking to go into the creative process of an artist, any artist of any type. Highly recommend it. It's based on the exhibition over at the Billy Ireland Cartoon Library and Museum here at The Ohio State University.
That's a recommendation from Brian Lohr, who is the owner of Cover to Cover Books for Kids in Upper Arlington. Michelle Herman's running for a plane. Thank you for being here, Professor Emerita of Creative Writing at The Ohio State University. Chris Hickey brings us quick picks from the Columbus Library. She works at Whetstone. Go and say hello to her because she's delightful, as is everybody at our neighborhood branch and all through the library system. Thank you. And Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. And I'm Christopher Purdy, and all I get to do is yak and write down titles of books. My thanks to Cameron Howard, and my thanks to Marcus, whatever your name is, the producer here at not Classical 101. That's my morning job. WOSU Public Media's 89.7 NPR News. This is The Book Show, wishing you all happy holidays.